it's really more of a squeak than anything. That song, I did it. I did it. It's on. Power on. Is that better? It wasn't screwed in. Whose fault is that? Okay. Have you ever tried to... No. You people down there, you missed something, but not much. Okay. And Cordell even told me, and so I did it, Cordell. I know. Thanks. That song, We Gather Together, is really precious to Sue and me because it was the song that was sung at our wedding, the congregational singing at our wedding. And when I say, have you ever tried to sing while you're crying, I just remember the song being so meaningful, and I'm so emotional, and all that's coming out of these squeaks, and it was bad. I don't know, were you able to? Too nervous to remember anything, okay. She's still nervous. It's a Thanksgiving song. We got married the day after Thanksgiving, and this is the season of Thanksgiving, which is inextricably linked to harvest. I wanted to encourage you all in something. Every year in February, I try to fire you up to come to the church on a Sunday evening for what we call the planting of the seeds. And some of us get together and we fill little containers with soil and we put seeds in and we water them and we have pizza. There's always pizza. It'll be pizza next Sunday night. But it is the ultimate act of faith to plant a tiny little seed in the ground and look forward to what it's going to produce. That is an act of faith. Well, let me tell you about what happened this year. This year, our acts of faith produced more than 3,000 ears of corn, of which more than 2,000 went to Clare House. I cannot tell you how many peppers we produced, but we produced more than a peck of pickled peppers. I know this, that one... Now, this is all these harvest figures are just what were delivered. At the same time, people amongst us and in the neighborhoods and beyond, they're coming and doing just what we want them to do. They're taking. They're receiving the bounty of the garden. In fact, it was election night, and I was here, and this is a polling place, and one of the election judges, this sweet old gal I've come to enjoy named June, she has to be in her 80s, and she is feisty. She comes back and says, Pastor Dave, I have to tell you about somebody who came through today. She said this gal came through, and she said she was registering or what, not registering, but getting her ballot. She says, do you know about the garden behind this church? And June says, yes, I do. She says, well, let me tell you. My daughter and I, who live together, this was an older lady, my daughter and I, who live together, don't know what we would do without this garden in the summer. And these are people I know who come here and just routinely take vegetables from the garden. What a beautiful thing. I vote for that. That is really cool. Back to the peppers. One day, I took 9 garbage bags, big black garbage bags, full of peppers. 9. To the Home Sweet Home Mission. And then this last go-around, Bruce in the garage had 12 bags, like paper sack bags, 12 stuffed peppers, stuffed with peppers. And I took them to the Clare House Soup Kitchen at St. Mary's, and when the people came out to help, they were like, seriously, my bug was full. They were in the passenger seat, they were behind the seat, the trunk, it was Pepper Nation. These people who were friends of ours, they're Yuhai parents, and the people we know, they're like, Dave, where did you get all these peppers? And You got to come and see. Because these peppers, they start with a tiny little. And here's the other thing that anybody who worked in the garden will know. This year started off as if there aren't going to be any peppers. These little plants just sat there and didn't grow. And we were like, ooh, boy. But see, that's what faith is. Faith is not stopping to believe when the evidence looks contrary. Oh, my. This is how it was with the peppers this year. We would pick off of one, let's say one bell pepper plant. We would pick 15 to 20 off of one plant. I'm not exaggerating about this. We'd come back the next week and we'd pick 15 or 20 off the same plant. And as I said before, Bruce was not out there with his magic dust like he has been in previous years. Little Miracle-Grow action. We didn't do that this year very much. Unless Lynn was doing it. He just whispered something to Betty. Were you out there doing it? Well, add to that the tomatoes and the beans and the what have you. Sweet potatoes galore. Harvest, Thanksgiving. And here's what I also hope when I say this. I know that people make resolutions. I want to help with that garden next year, somebody's saying. Well, then do it. I'll tell you this. The ladies shame the men here when it comes to who's here on a Saturday morning and who's on hands and knees and making a difference. There were several weekends where we made a difference this year. Had we not, it's overtaken by weeds or pests or whatever. Get involved next year. What a difference it makes to be able to in two deliveries, take more than 1,000 ears. Do the 1,000 ears of corn to Clare House. That is so cool. So I thank the Lord for what he did with what looked like marginal became fantastic. This is when we begin a seasonal awareness. This is Thanksgiving, and it heads us right into Advent and my favorite time of year and my favorite time for the church here. I'm frustrated about something as the pastor, and it's this. We're supposed to start at 10:30. And about 10:35, whoever was leading the music says to me, well, should we go? Yeah. Well, and as Bob said, you show up. But let me tell you something about Advent. This, I'm being the superintendent of schools here right now when I say this. Advent season this year, the services are going to be different. You can't just assume, well, I'll just show up during singing and I'll just, no, it's not going to be that way. At 10:30, the service is going to start, and you're not going to want to miss what happens at 10:30, okay? It's not too hard to get here at 10:30. It's not. Be here. Be here next week at 10:30. The services are going to be different. You won't want to miss it. The prize giveaways start at 10:30. Be here. There is a scene in one of my favorite movies that actually has a Thanksgiving scene. The movie Shenandoah. Raise your hand if you've seen Shenandoah. Okay, good. It's a farm in Virginia during the Civil War. Charlie Anderson, Jimmy Stewart. Scott does a pretty good, no, he doesn't. He does Jimmy Stewart, but it's not good. Okay. And here's the deal. Charlie's got this family of boys. What? Oh, please don't. And a daughter. And his wife, Martha, has passed away. And he's trying to hold this family together. They have a great place, farm. And the war is going on around him, and they're trying to stay out of the war. And Charlie is, I love the guy. He is so pig-headed and in love with his family and in love with his life. But he is what we would call a pretty self-sufficient thinking guy. As we approach Thanksgiving this year, I don't want us to be like Charlie in his prayers. Will you hit the lights and watch Charlie's prayer?
We cleared this land.
Why don't we start over so we don't miss the... I'm on the microphone so we don't miss the thing, okay?
It wouldn't be here.
Can we start over?
We'd be eating it if we hadn't done it all ourselves. Lord, we cleared this land. We plowed it, sowed it, and harvested. We cooked the harvest. It wouldn't be here. We wouldn't be eating it if we hadn't done it all ourselves. We work dog bone hard for every crumb and morsel, but we thank you just the same anyway, Lord, for this food we're about to eat. Amen.
Let us take inventory and see that that's not how we view God's blessing. Now, here's why I bring this up. That is kind of funny. But what happens in this movie teaches Charlie something. It teaches him that he's not self-sufficient. It teaches him that he's not immune to what's going on around him and what life brings. And the real drama of this movie is that Charlie's losing his boys to the war, casualties of war. But his youngest, who he calls the boy, is captured by Union soldiers. He's just out hunting with a friend. He has a gun. Sadly, he's wearing a Confederate cap that he came upon, and they think he's a soldier, and they kidnap him. When Charlie Anderson, the self-sufficient one, discovers that the boy is now a prisoner of war, he is undone. And he's not able to just act like this doesn't now involve him. I can't think of a better way to close our series on John and Genesis, then with the character in Genesis who I think more than any other points us to Jesus. And that's Joseph. And you recall in recent weeks, we've talked about Jacob at Jacob's Well. Last week, we talked about Judah, Jacob's son. I want to read to you just a couple of paragraphs from this, the Book of God, which is the Bible as a novel. And this is very much in keeping with what Genesis 37 tells us. If you know the story, Joseph, the boy, and the apple of his dad's eye, is sent by his dad, Jacob, to go find his brothers, who are sick of him, sick to the point of they hate him. And so they, his brothers, who should be his defenders, protectors, mentors, they say, we're going to kill him. And then interestingly enough, Judah, our bad guy from last week, enters into the story and says, now let's not kill him. Let's sell him. Listen to this. 7 days later, when the 10 grown sons of Jacob returned from Shechem, by the way, that's where Jacob's well is, Joseph was not among them. No, they hadn't seen him. Swore they hadn't seen Joseph anywhere since they had left Hebron more than a month ago. And of course, that was a lie. On the other hand, they'd found a coat with long sleeves, very similar to Joseph's. Now, if you remember, the very sight of that coat just infused hatred in them because they saw it as favoritism, which it was. It was stiff with dried blood. It had been torn violently in three places. "Father, can it be Joseph's coat?" The old man, Jacob, took one look at the riven cloth and began to howl. "My son, my son." He tried to smooth the garment with the flat of his hand, then gathered it up and buried his face in it. "My son has been devoured by lions. Surely Joseph is torn to pieces." Jacob rent his robe. That doesn't mean that he loaned it to somebody for money. It means he tore it and put sackcloth upon his loins and mourned for many days. Reuben and Simeon and Levi and Dinah, all his children, one by one came to us. Now imagine, just imagine the lowness of this, them knowing the truth. But one by one, these partners in crime, who would have said, "Oh, I love my father," they denied that love because one by one, they came to his tent and tried to comfort him. But Jacob refused to be comforted. He said, "No, no, I will go to my grave lamenting Joseph, lamenting my dear son Joseph." Well, the good news is Joseph wasn't dead. The great news is Joseph was right where God wanted him. How the book of John mirrors the book of Genesis is so remarkable. Because we have Joseph who is equipped by God with amazing personal gifts, that he would go to Egypt and would literally become the number two man in this great dynasty of Egypt. And it is his brilliance by the inspiration of God that during these years of harvest, when he's in charge of the economics of this kingdom, that he would say, "We're not going to just use it all up. We're not going to just be gluttonous. We're going to create bins, and we're going to save." And they did. And then famine came. And because he had directed that they save, they survived. They included his brothers, his sisters, his family, his father. His father, who thought he was dead, his brothers, who thought he was off somewhere, never to be seen again, because they had saved wheat, they lived. What does that have to do with Jesus? Well, on kind of the macro scale, we can say that Jesus, loved by his Father, sent on a mission, denied by his brothers, which includes us. Left in a hole in the ground, for dead, comes to new life, and goes and prepares a place for us. That's found in John chapter 14. I'd say on the macro scale, that's it. But Jesus said I'm going to focus on three verses that he said that I think we always need to come back to, and we always need to kind of launch our anticipation of the coming of the King, which is what we're we'll begin anticipating next Sunday. We need to link him to, but why did he come? And what did he do? And so you've seen this, this picture of this wheat up here. And I wonder what you've thought about that. Michael, you put the verse up there. John is the only one who... Hey, that's nice. Who takes us here. Truly, truly, I say to you, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains alone. Joseph, put in a hole in the ground. Unless that would have happened to him, if his brothers would have said, hey, Joseph, have some lamb, here we go. None of this other stuff happens that saves a whole race of people. Unless Jesus becomes that grain of wheat and dies, we're not here. In fact, my contention is we wouldn't be alive. And that contention is based upon the fact that Jesus was born into a world that knew no mercy. And he brought mercy. And he brought the kind of humanitarian understanding that has led people to want to celebrate life, which leads them to want to build hospitals and universities. And you know, it's amazing how the universities have forgotten who started them and why. But it's because Jesus died and went into the ground. And how much fruit has that borne? Well, we've got the soul fruit, which is billions. But we've got the living fruit, which is life. He bore that when he defeated sin and death. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. Now, friends, he was saying this about himself, but he was also saying it to his disciples. And therefore, he's saying it to us. If you have trusted Christ, if you have fallen at his mercy, you have gone through this mortification, this I no longer live, but Christ lives in me, as Paul puts it. If you haven't gone through that mortification and you're not sure where you stand, I want to talk to you sometime. Because I'm telling you, unless you die, Jesus doesn't live. And then you don't live. It isn't simple, and it's the most simple thing in the world. Next picture slide. What do you suppose that is, class? That is wheat. That is, what did somebody say? Oh, peppers, yes. Mia, we left the peppers a while back. If you'd like some, I still have a few. That's wheat. But whoever said corn, I think Lori, you know they're related. Yeah, kind of grass. So I'll give you a C on that. You, my dear, do not pass. Sorry. That's wheat. How did that get there? A grain of wheat produces all of those stalks on one shoot that you see. Excuse me. Next slide, Micah. Lazarus has died. Jesus' friend Lazarus, brother of Mary and Martha, good guy. Didn't plan on dying so young. Hit the community really hard. Jesus shows up. Excuse me. I need a drink. Don't tell somebody your pastor said I need a drink, okay? Of coffee. The Cubs season is over, so I don't need to say that anymore. Okay. Jesus shows up and they say, oh, Lord, had you just been here, you've healed people. We know you would have healed Lazarus. You loved him. And Jesus, who wasn't there for a reason, because Lazarus had to be the grain of wheat that died in order for God to receive all his glory. And he did. He was truly dead. 4 days. By now he surely stinketh, the King James says. I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. And everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die. And how about him looking you in the eye and saying, do you believe this? That's hard to believe when your brother is dead. And that's who he's talking about. Remember how we said the book of John is about belief. It doesn't get any more critical, important, fundamental. Why are we here? Why is there the Church of Christ? Why are we 2,000 years later celebrating his birth? Why? Because of this. He who believes in me will never die. We've been praying on Wednesday nights for some people who are dreadfully ill. One gal who's a dear friend of Dee's, young gal, 25, has a little baby, loves Jesus, cancer just raging in her, and we pray for her. And then Friday I get an email from Dee that says they found more cancer. They found it in her lungs and in her brain. And my first thought was this, that she'll never die. She'll live forever. She'll be absent from the body for a while, but to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord, Dee. And the great joy that we have is Jesus looking us in the eye and saying, do you believe this? He would never jerk our chain. And he would never say, stop praying. In fact, he says the opposite. We ought always to pray and not lose heart. And we pray not as those people who have no hope. We will pray that he touches her, that he extends her life. But you want to know something? Any one of us might die before she does. We don't know. When we go to build bigger barns because we think we're going to come into all this wealth, we may not know that the next day our life will be required of us. That's why Jesus looks us in the eye and says, you got to come to some kind of point here where you decide whether you believe me or not. And you come to that point, and isn't it remarkable how when you come to him in that brokenness, something happens. Something happens. A transaction has taken place. Your trust has produced fruit. And it's your trust that he is the King, the Sovereign, the one who gives life and takes it up and gives it again. That's what he said about himself. This is before the resurrection, and those folks didn't get it, but he said, I am the resurrection. He knew. He knew. Next picture slide. Me, I give you a chance to pass. What is that? That is wheat, isn't it? Those little green pepper plants turned into wheat. It's so amazing. It's a miracle. I wish the Hodels were here today. They're, I think, in Texas. You know how they kind of courted each other? They both drove combines and trucks in a wheat harvesting crew that went from Texas up to Manitoba. Abigail, the girly one who makes jewelry, she can drive a combine. She's something else. Did you ever see those massive fields? Rows of combines going through them. Those fields are ripe unto harvest. Next slide. All these from the book of John. Joseph saved his people by saving wheat. Jesus says, "My food is to do the will of him who sent me and to accomplish his work." Do you not say, in other words, here's a rhetorical question, there are yet 4 months, then comes the harvest? Look, I tell you, lift up your eyes and see that the fields are white for harvest. I have a lot of failures as a pastor and in my teaching. I know I tend to tell too many stories about a place, a little town that none of you know anything about. I think one of my failures is I have failed to challenge us enough to be evangelists. And the real essence of it is this. When Jesus looks you in the eye and says, "Do you believe this?" And you say, "Yes, I do, Lord. I need you. I know without you, I am doomed. I can't save myself. I can't fix myself. I can't raise myself when I go into the ground as that seed." And Jesus says, "Get involved in the harvest. Get involved in the harvest." Can I make up for 6 years of bad teaching and say, get involved in the harvest? And do it this Advent season, and do it by not being afraid to talk about Jesus. Bob was telling me this morning, if I may, Bob, that he was talking to an upper level person at State Farm, and she came to him and said, "You have the patience of Job." And he said he chose not to proselytize, but yet he talked to her, and he told me what he said. If somebody says something like that to you, or someone takes the Lord's name in vain, what an opportunity for you to say, "Oh, do you love Jesus? Or do you know about that name? Or do you know? Thanks for the Old Testament reference with patience of Job." They'll look at you kind of screwy. And they'll think, maybe this guy has so much patience because he's got some inner strength. And maybe I could use that. And remember, it's not about us, it's about him. But Christmas of all, I know I did say this last year, so I give myself a little grace. Christmas of all seasons affords the opportunity to say to a lost and dying world, you don't have to die. And you don't have to be lost. Because Jesus has gone into the ground and he is raised up, and we are that fruit, and that person who's staring at you blankly in the face may be that fruit too, because we were all the blank starers at one time. Really, really cool. As we start next Sunday, like I said, the services are going to be different. But they're all intended to build in us a sense of anticipation. And that anticipation is based upon hope, and that hope will not disappoint. That hope will not disappoint. That hope is what we must have in order to believe. And so we close our time with John and Genesis. And seriously, folks, that could go on forever. The connections. I hope that you've seen some things maybe you didn't see before. But I hope in all of it, you look back and you see from the start of Genesis, in the beginning, God, that you see Jesus, that you see the one who says, "Do you believe this?" Let's flip the lights on, wake everybody up, and sing.